Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes, that's right. We are the Superfans. The Superfans you thought we were. We're going to prove it to you on this next 45 minutes to an hour, hopefully not too much longer than that, but you never know. We are passionate about our teams, and so we tend to talk a little bit longer than we should, but I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan and your host for this evening, and I am going to try to keep this thing wrangled. I am joined here by our Seahawks superfan, Justin. How's it going, Justin?
I am doing terrific. I feel like it's been too long since we've had a show together.
Indeed, indeed. And we're also joined by one of our newest superfans, our Saint superfan, Chris, and draft listing extraordinaire. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing great. How are you doing there in New York?
Doing all right. You know, just so the fans remember, if you hate these lists and mocks, Chris is the guy that does them. That's an important association to make.
I am that guy. It's a horrible existence.
And he came here as that guy, but we really appreciate it because he's done far more draft homework than pretty much anybody else on this show, I think. And so he's gotten together a big board. If you missed us running through his offensive big board and his top five at all of the offensive positions going into the draft, we put that podcast out last week. I suggest you go back and listen to it. But this week, we're going to be tackling the defense, no pun intended. Actually, I intended that pun. I was thinking about that. And there's a lot of news, actually, that ties into some of these picks as well. If this is one of your first time listening to us, there's a lot of ways you can find us and listen to us and some of the other content we put out there. You can find us always at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can also find our podcast and our text comments. We oftentimes have super fans chiming in on things that are going on that can't quite make it on the show, but still want to get their voice out there and an informed opinion on things. And we'll toss that up on Facebook. And you can find that by just typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. And most of us are somehow getting involved in discussions with that throughout the day. And so you can talk some jive with us, get involved, ask us questions. All that is very welcome. And again, like I said, we are the super fans. What makes us unique is that we have a fan representative from all of the NFL teams. And so we're doing this on our own time to spread the knowledge, to correct the national media zeitgeist wrongs about our teams in many cases. And we're about to start off a mock draft. However, the one superfan spot we are still working to fill is the Titans, and it's difficult to start off a mock draft without your first overall pick. So we're really looking for a Titans fan, anyone who wants to be involved in the show. The mock draft's a lot of fun because we do have people picking for their own teams. If you are a Titans fan, first of all, I am very, very sorry. But second of all, you should join us, and it'll be a lot of fun. If you're looking to join, send us an application about what makes you a super fan and maybe a little bit of something about where you think your team should be looking in the draft, what they should do with that first overall pick. Send that to nextfanup@gmail.com, and we'd love to have you. All right. Well, without further ado, let's get into some of the news this week. It was something that it's been unfortunate for the Chiefs. You know, we had actually, I think, a very good free agency, which was then sort of, you know, just like we had everything going for us well in terms of the moves that we had made. And then comes down the news that we supposedly tampered and we're going to be stripped of a third round pick. And then, you know, we're sort of getting settled into, you know, where we're going to go with our top two picks, even though we don't have the third one and we have no hope of really appealing that. And then we get new news, which is that Justin Houston, our total wrecker of a outside linebacker, had surgery on his ACL in February because apparently, we've known he'd had this leg injury since, I don't know, it was very late in the season last year. He played through it, not particularly well in the postseason a little bit. But apparently, they went in just to scope it out and found that his ACL was just not functioning. And so they decided to do surgery on it, and his recovery time is 6 to 12 weeks, which would put him out, quite possibly for the entire season. And if it's anywhere close, I mean, I'm not even sure if they should try to push him back. But either way, this is a huge blow. This really, I mean, I've been confident the Chiefs were the heir apparent in the AFC West, but this team does just not play quite as well without the guy they build their defense around. And so this is a really big deal. Justin, you have a team with an entirely dominant defense. I don't know if there's any guy that you guys rely on quite as much as we do on Houston, but what was your reaction when you heard about the knee?
Like a lot of people, when I heard he was having ACL surgery, my first thought was why now? Why not before? Which I think you summed up nicely. It's a huge blow. When I think of Kansas City, I tend to think of a very strong defense, and I especially tend to think of a very strong pass rush led by Justin Houston, or Houston as popular call him. So I think it's a huge blow. The Chiefs, to me, they were like that kind of fast rising stock at the end of the season. They looked really good then. People around them were getting weaker. They had a nice free agency, and they hit this peak. And then it's like the bottom fell out between getting punished by the league, by injuries like this one. I'm still pretty confident in them. I still like them to win the AFC West. But not having Justin Houston would be a huge blow. Would you agree, though, that, obviously depending on how the doctors feel, he's pretty much guaranteed to be that IR with the designation to return based on his time frame?
That would seem to make the most sense because he's going to miss. Even if he thinks he's going to be game ready early in the first half of the season, I don't think they should be putting him on the field in a game in the first half of the season. He's put out some really confident tweets, about against the naysayers that say he's not going to start this year. But I mean, the thing is that he's just so vital that I'd almost rather them ice him for a year than have there any risk of, because, like you said, this is something where we knew there was something wrong back in like December. And then, he's still playing through it, possibly made it worse. Either way, it delayed his recovery time because they didn't really deal with it until 2 months later. And now his whole season is a bit in question. The thing is that they've been grooming Dee Ford, who's our first overall pick in the first round. Not first overall pick. He was our first round pick in 2014. The thing is, he's not nearly as good as Tom Bahaly or Justin Houston. He's a bit more of a speed rusher. He needs to develop a few more pass rushing moves. But he came on late in the season last year, and they've been grooming him to be able to either be a very stable rotational guy that can spell either Holly or Houston, or to be, the heir apparent for Holly eventually. And look, I think on one hand, it probably makes sense. I'm looking forward to him getting a bit more time to prove that, to see what we got in him. I mean, if he's just going to be a career backup or if he really could take over and give us not too much of a drop off in production there. But I think, Chiefs, obviously Chiefs Twitter went nuts when this news came down. And even with all the dust settled now, I think the Chiefs do have to be into discussions for, looking at picking up an additional pass rusher. And at this point, with free agency already come and gone for the most part, that's going to be in the draft. It's not an awful draft for that, but the fact is they got to be looking at that because, look, Houston's now been injured in several seasons. Holly is never fully healthy, it seems like, and is now more of a rotational guy. And they really need that pass rush for this team to work.
My concern with him, if he does come back too early, is we end up in a situation like one of the Ravens, I want to say it was Terrell Suggs a few years ago when he ruptured his Achilles and said he would be back on this crazy time frame to hit the start of the season. And he did make it back, but he was ineffective for the entire year because that thing never healed. If I were a Chiefs fan, I would it would make me a little nervous to see him line up on week one. And I would definitely much rather see him be on a PUP or IR designated to return.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. And I certainly would not want him to try to push it in any way. But it'll be interesting to see how then the next few moves go in terms of the draft and how confident the Chiefs are in terms of his health. But moving over to the other side of the ball, we've been talking, it seems like every week about where some of these quarterbacks are going to land. But I don't like just rehashing the same points over and over, but a lot of the stuff just continues to be more and more interesting, particularly when it comes to just a simple question of what is a starting quarterback in the NFL worth these days? I mean, that is a very open and debatable question still. We got one more data point on that by RG3 signing a 2-year deal in Cleveland for about $7.5 million a year. The guys talked about it a lot on Thursday, but I was curious to see what your guys' thoughts were on that. You know, Chris, you're going through a contract negotiation of your own for your own team. What was your reaction to the RG3 signing in Cleveland?
To be honest, shocked. You know, and RG3 is a great example of what I'd be worried about with Justin Houston as well. You know, if you remember back when he really blew up that knee, that was an injury that happened before. They brought him back early, and that was a non-contact injury when his legs buckled underneath him. He just fell. You know, so that's something that image will always last in my memory of RG3. And I want to say it's a good fit, though I think he's a horrible quarterback. it's unfortunate, but one of the biggest issues with RG3 is his ego. And when you go to a team like Cleveland, that's going to be very young, has kind of gotten rid of all their established starters, their veterans, they're going to allow him to be himself. So you may not have that inner turmoil in the locker room like you did in Washington. He may be himself. And if he's healthy, he can be okay, but just okay. I'm reading a lot of reports that, and it's very likely now, that Cleveland will not go quarterback with their first pick. It's a huge mistake. I still think, you know, somebody like Carson Wentz or Jared Goff, they need that year to sit behind somebody. That needs to be RG3's only season starting in Cleveland. They need to go quarterback early and then let him sit behind RG3 and just hope they don't pay attention to him when he tries to teach him how to go through a progression.
I definitely don't like it if they decide that signing RG3 means that they're good at the position and they don't need to draft a quarterback high. On the other hand, I actually don't hate the move from the standpoint of, I mean, the fact is that Cleveland has a ton of money to work with. I mean, they just have boatloads of cap room, and it's in part which makes it even more perplexing that they haven't re-signed a lot of their own outgoing free agents, and they haven't been able to bring people in. I think it's partially because everyone just knows that they're a mess, and they don't yet have a clear rebuilding plan in place where people can look at it like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing here, and so they can't even. They have tons of money that they can't even spend. So why not throw $7.5 million at a guy who, I mean, it seems like he at least is, maybe he's a low end starter and that's his ceiling now. But look, that's something, because at this point, any quarterback that I think that the market was confident in, and we could even debate whether or not the market should have been as confident as it was in terms of setting a price for it in the high teens for Bradford and Brock, or whether or not those guys were overpaid. But either way, those were the ones those are the guys that teams really wanted. So now you're down to the people that are out there that are not, you know, perfect prospects, and you're going to be, you know, it's the bottom of the barrel. But look, I mean, a high round pick, even the second pick overall, that's still a lottery ticket of its own. I mean, maybe your hit percentage is, maybe the ceiling's definitely higher than RG3 right now at some point. The floor is lower, and who knows? I mean, I think if you're in a position like the Browns, where you need to get better everywhere and where you're starting almost from scratch, why not buy two lottery tickets rather than one? I mean, I feel like in a way that, you know, in the media, we like to create a narrative, and we want to see like a team going all in on one move, as if that's smarter, because it's a clear narrative. Like, oh yeah, well, they're building up, or they're going to build up around this guy. Like, well, but if they fail with that one guy, and that like 3 years were wasted, wouldn't they have been smarter with going with two? I mean, I think another example would be like just the RG3 and Kirk Cousins. Everyone thought that Washington was crazy for, you know, drafting another quarterback high when they just got RG3. And they're like, well, look, we just took two lottery tickets, so we think that it was good value at each position, and who knows how it's going to work out. Well, I mean, it ended up being that second lottery ticket they took was the smart one.
You bring up a great point. And part of it is, look, I live close to Cleveland. There's not a big reason to move to Cleveland unless someone's willing to pay you millions of dollars to play a professional sport. You know, in Seattle, Seattle's a beautiful city. You have the fish market. You've got so many things. People want to live there. Nobody wants to live in Cleveland. So naturally, they are going to have to overpay. But my concern is who they're overpaying to bring in. A three-year deal for RG3 is concerning to me because it's not just his health that's questioned. It's his personality. You just got rid of an issue in your locker room with Johnny Manziel. Now you're potentially bringing in another one. That's my concern. If I'm going to spend money because I have to, you know, Oakland, everybody made fun of Oakland a few years ago when they brought in all these overpriced veterans for 1-2 year deals. They ended up being great moves. They got a year, 2 years out of them, and then they're gone. There was no repercussions for letting them go. Cleveland's not even doing that. Cleveland's just sitting pat. They're going to end up having to do something like what Jacksonville's been doing, which is giving somebody like Chris Ivory 2 to 3 times his market value. And when you start to do that, you're hurting yourself 5, 6, 7 years down the road. And as a Saints fan, believe me, I know how hard it is to have a team with no salary cap. Now, the difference is my team can be good and is good most seasons. Cleveland's not. So with bringing in this new management, this new style with I believe his name is Sashi Brown. Is that it? The Moneyball guy? They have to hit or hit big because they're doing things that are so drastically different from everybody else. If this doesn't work, it doesn't work soon, they're out of the job.
Well, and speaking of weird money situations and places where people don't want to go, apparently, the Raiders have had this long-running dispute with Oakland over their stadium, which they want to replace. And, you know, I think for a long time there was some real dispute about who had the worst stadium in the league. But now that there's no longer an NFL team playing in St. Louis, I think O.co pretty much wins the cake, hands down. I mean, it's the only mixed-use stadium where you have players running through, you know, the open dirt from the baseball infield during the year. The turf is horrible. I mean, everything is outdated from what I understand on the inside. And on top of it, the Oakland is now going to be charging the Raiders 4 times more to play at this subpar stadium. The new lease that was just signed here, according to Pro Football Talk, the Raiders are going to pay $3.5 million to play at O.co in 2016. Last year, they paid $925,000. And on top of it, given the fact that the Raiders are going to be giving up a home game in Mexico to go to Mexico City, that actually raises their per game rate to $388,888, and that's up from $92,500. So that is more than 4 times per game that they're paying to be in the stadium. I mean, the Raiders have the option to join the Rams now in the new Inglewood project in 2 years. They have to wait for the Chargers to make their decision on it. This definitely doesn't seem like it's going to get worked out here. The other note or is noteworthy news on this was that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, was asked about the possibility of putting a franchise in Las Vegas at the owners' meetings. And he basically left the door open to that. I mean, there's been a lot of talk that they weren't favorable towards that just because being that close to all of that gambling was a bad look and a potential for, you know, the NFL getting more involved in the gambling scene. But quite frankly, with daily fantasy, that ship has already sailed. But either way, it definitely looks like the Raiders are going to be, if they're not going to be the next team, they definitely have to be rising to the top of teams that are likely to move the locations.
So as I understand it, one of the reasons for the price increase is that they've switched to pretty much just a year-to-year, which, you know, just sounds like they're paying the premium to lay the groundwork for something changing in the future, be it just the Coliseum itself or where they're going to play in the somewhere in the country. So if you kind of read the tea leaves, that is a crazy, crazy rent increase, but I kind of understand it. But man, that is a big jump.
And yeah, I mean, it's surprising the Raiders are just now getting good. you're pushing out a team that you've watched a losing franchise for so many years, and then finally, I mean, I'm not a Raiders fan, and I'm excited for this upcoming season for them. And now is when you start playing a game of like, playoffs. We don't have time for playoffs. We got to get rid of you.
Yeah, you know, we went through something kind of similar here when the Sonics left. They were, they were still very well liked, the fans turned out for them. But they've been pretty bad for a number of years, and then they moved to Oklahoma, and like the very first thing they do is draft Kevin Durant, and have been to the playoffs every year since. It was like, man, we put up with all the suffering, and you guys get to reap all the winning seasons. That hurts.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I feel like any move that happens, it'd probably be a couple years off. So we'll see. I mean, if the Raiders are suddenly like actually a really good team by then, that becomes a much more interesting decision. Because at this point, though, it seems like there's just so much bad blood between the Davis family and the local authorities. I mean, also in this piece was a quote by Oakland City Council member Noel Gallo, maybe? I don't know. Anyways, this council member said, quote, "I'm ready to kiss and say goodbye and help him pack his bags," speaking about Mark Davis, the new owner of the Raiders. So it doesn't look like things are great there. And as we saw with the Rams, I mean, it wasn't like they suddenly moved. There was years of acrimony there. And probably, the Rams had decided they were going to leave a few years ahead of time. And it definitely looks like with some of these sort of reports that that's becoming the Raiders' preference. We've been going through a lot of teams, we started this whole thing before free agency in terms of talking about our to-do list for our teams. But every time, we have a super fan on, we like to get their thoughts, go a little bit deeper with them into what they think their team should do on this offseason and where they don't quite agree with what the team has been doing. And so I've been excited to give Chris the floor because we haven't had a lot of Saints talk on the Next Fan Up podcast in quite a while. And again, you guys have also been in the news. There's been you just extended Sean Payton, and it appears to be a bit of a tougher contract negotiation with quarterback Drew Brees than you've had in quite a long time. So Chris, let's just jump there. I mean, what is going on in terms of the latest with that, and how do you think the team is done in terms of moving into this next season?
To start off with the Drew Brees negotiation, I think you have a couple things at play here. For the past couple of seasons, Mickey Loomis, the Saints GM, has just really done whatever he wanted to do. Every season we go into free agency with no money, and yet we end up with a Jarius Byrd or a Curtis Lofton. We give away money with trades like with Jimmy Graham and cutting Junior Gallette. He's just never had any regard for next season. He's always lived by today. And we've brought in Jeff Ireland, who's the old, who's with the Dolphins for a while. And last year, you started to see a lot of things change. We didn't trade up in the draft. We didn't trade next year's picks. We've always done that. And it almost seems like in a way that they're taking a season and they're fixing the salary cap. They're starting to build up draft picks again. Going into next year, and it's something that's not being reported anywhere, we're going to have one of the highest cap availabilities out of any team in the NFL because we're finally done with the Jimmy Graham dead money and the Junior Gallette dead money, and we won't have a quarterback making $30 million. So this offseason has been a lot of trying to rebuild the defense, but also changing how the team is run. I love it. It gives us the ability to go in, be a player next year, but yet we've still found a way to bring in Laurinaitis Robertson from Cleveland, who I'm a huge fan of. I think he was very underrated coming into this offseason. There's reports of Nick Fairley, which I'm conflicted with Nick Fairley as a player, but frankly, at this point, we shouldn't be able to afford him, and he could help if he's motivated to play. So we've made a lot of the moves that we needed to do. We still have a lot of holes. Our guard position is terrible, and it's the most important part of our offensive line with Drew Brees at quarterback. We still, I'm not entirely impressed with our wide receiving core. I'm a huge fan of Cooks and Snead, but losing Marcus Folsom is huge for us. We need that big physical guy over the middle. So we've got a lot to do yet in the draft, but we've been able to get a lot done. Kobe Fleener is another one. I know fans at first are really upset with his contract, but we were able to get up $2.5 million this year. That's insane for somebody of his talent. So, and in this offense, he can do very well. He's not Jimmy Graham, but he's big and he's fast. And unfortunately, Jimmy Graham has kind of shown what he is outside of New Orleans. We might be able to show what Kobe Fleener can be in this offense. Justin, again, really sorry about that trade. You guys got hosed a bit. Thank you for Max Unger, too, by the way. But, no, we've got a lot of work to do. You know, we still need a draft. We still need a defense. You know, there's a lot of talk if we're going to 3-4, 4-3. I just hope we pick one and do it. I'd love to see a defense play next year. You're concerned about Justin Houston only having one leg. I would kill for a one-legged Justin Houston on this team. That's how bad it is. So hopefully we can go into the draft. I think we discussed a little bit last week. You know, we've bringing in guys like Noah Spence and Shaq Lawson are still guys that you can't really pinpoint if you're running a 3-4 or 4-3. They could excel in both. So, no, it'll be interesting. We still kind of need to see where we end up. I do think the Breeze extension is going to happen. But you're going to start to see a lot of Zach Streifs and Thomas Morstead's first getting reworked.
So I want to first just I find it amusing because we do have both of you guys on the air right now. And what I'd like to hear each of your guys' after-action report of that trade last year, because that was kind of the biggest blockbuster trade of the year. And so how do you think it worked out for you, first of all, Chris? It seems like you're pretty happy with it.
I'm a huge Jimmy Graham fan. I loved him in New Orleans. I hated the trade that happened. It made zero sense to me at the time. But after seeing, you know, we really needed somebody like Max Unger, who's not the Max Unger he was 5 years ago, but he's still a very good center. He really kind of helped tie together our line. And Stephon Anthony was huge for us. He's the first linebacker we've drafted that actually seems like he's going to pan out in 15 years. So we got a lot of value for it. Fill in the salary cap repercussions, but it worked out for us, I believe.
My take on it is I'm perfectly happy with the trade. It was sad to see Max Unger go, you know, homegrown talent who has played some really, really good football. But after some initial speed bumps for most of the season, we didn't really experience a drop-off at the center position. So I hate to see him go, but on the field, that didn't end up being a huge loss. We basically got Jimmy Graham as our first round pick, which was number 31 overall. I'll take that all day long. Absolutely. Especially if you're telling me that we get Jimmy Graham, but the Saints are paying for him. Yeah, absolutely. I can down. It was unfortunate when he got hurt because he was, that was right when the offense was kind of completing that transition into a pass-first offense. And he was such a huge part of that, especially like that game in particular. He was the best player on the field and so dominant. And for years, I've been a big Jimmy Graham fan. People who play fantasy football with me know I would tend to draft him really, really early. And I tended to win a lot of games because I really, really like him. So I would say because of the injury, I'm going to give it an incomplete at the moment. But this feels like a case where kind of the cliche of, you know, it's a win for both sides actually kind of fits. The Saints did get some cap relief out of it. They got an extra pick, which they needed. They got a good interior offensive lineman, which they needed. And, man, we got Jimmy Graham. Like, what are you talking about? Of course I like that trade. I'm just bummed about the injury. Can't wait to see him back on the field.
You know, the ironic part about it with him going to Seattle is Seattle was seemingly the one team that knew how to shut him down. And that's the thing that kind of scared me with him going to Seattle is you guys wouldn't get a yard to him. You know, it was horrible playing you guys in the playoffs because you knew our number one weapon was gone. So So him going to the only team that knew how to stop him, I was excited. And then seeing how they just didn't seem to really figure him out. You know, he still hasn't figured out how to get off the line when he's in a three-down position. You know, he really is. He was kind of bright. He's a wide receiver. He's just a really big one. So hopefully he can next year get healthy and, you know, learn to block somebody, learn to get out of that three-point stance. If he does that, I mean, he's going to be Jimmy Graham again. He's going to be putting up huge, huge seasons for you.
Yeah, if he comes back healthy, and that's an if because it was a pretty severe knee injury, I'm really excited about the prospect of him this year, just like I was last year. Spoilers, the secret to shutting down Jimmy Graham is have a historically great defense and one of the best secondaries ever. So if you want to shut him down, other teams in the league, just have that. That's all you got to do.
Well, see, we, as Saints fans, we always thought it was Brandon Browner, and we were wrong.
No,
horrible.
No, yeah, no. The answer is never unless the question is who is that penalty on. The answer is never Brandon Browner.
I will never forget against Indianapolis Colts. Delvin Bro fell twice, and it's the only catches he gave up in the game. But Brandon Browner, after the second time, went to him on the field, and you could see him tell him, the next time you fall, grab him. And Saints boards blew up, because not only is he committing a penalty on every passing play, now he's trying to convince every other corner on the team to do it. It was
a bad influence. ultimately, our success against tight ends, my last little thing, is it's mostly Cam Chancellor. I mean, you know, here you have a guy that is a safety with the size of a linebacker with the speed of a safety, who is maybe the hardest hitting guy in all of football. He's kind of the straw that serves the drink there when it comes to shutting down tight ends.
Well, and so you mentioned, you know, we've already talked about the Drew Brees negotiations, but we've talked a lot about numbers on this podcast throughout all of the different names that are sort of out there and what these quarterbacks are worth. What's your guess, Chris, as to what the final sort of average yearly number for Drew Brees is going to be here?
It's going to be huge. You know, Peyton just signed what ultimately becomes a 5-year contract. I could see Brees getting a 4-year extension so they can, you know, they're attached at each other's hip. And I could see it averaging anywhere from 20 to 25 million a year. He's not going to take a discount. Something that he has pointed out before, you know, those first 5 years we had him, we stole him. He was, I think, on average, the 17th to 20th highest paid quarterback in football. And that was after the Super Bowl. He never asked for a renegotiation. He never asked for a contract. He went through it, and he played through that contract no matter how horribly underpaid he was. So he's getting paid, and he's not looking back about it. There's a lot more Jimmy Johns he needs to buy in New Orleans, apparently. And he's going to have the money to do it because they won't let him leave.
Yeah, take note of that about Russell Wilson there, Justin.
yeah, I'm keenly.
It's coming, Justin. You know, the way the Saints stopped Seattle is we gave you the highest paid tight end in football. We're killing you from the inside. That's the only way we can do it.
Yeah, that's exactly how the NFC went last year. Moving on to the main event here. On the podcast, which is our going to our big board. I'm really excited to talk about defense because going in, you know, even last week, I was pretty confident the Chiefs were going to be going heavily looking at defensive prospects this year. Now with Justin Houston going down, I'm even more confident in that because even though, look, I mean, he's going to be back, but you know, he's now shown himself to be at least a little bit injury prone. And we're going to have to get some more bodies there potentially all over the place, frankly. So let's just jump right into the defensive ends. I mean, these are the guys that I think of any group, we're probably going to see the most of them go high. Starting with, you know, your number one is not particularly controversial, Joey Bosa, followed by Shaq Lawson, DeForest Buckner. Then at 4, you have Emmanuel Ogba, and 5, Kevin Dodd. Bosa seems like almost locked in to be a top 5 guy. And I do think, though, you're one of the few people I've seen that has had Lawson up over Buckner. What did you see in Lawson that that made you confident in him in that way?
I think he's keen versatile. I think he's got the agility and the speed to come off the edge in both a 4-3 and a 3-4, where Buckner, I think, is kind of limited to just a 3-4. Buckner plays really high up, would bother me in a 4-3 as a 5 technique, which is what he'd have to play. I think his style would allow too many guards to get inside the body. Lawson's a monster. Between his speed, his size, his dip, he's able to rip, he can spin, he can club. The kid has potential. If the shoulder injury could push him back, which would be unfortunate, but he has potential to be really, really good. And I know last year the Saints seemed to scout everybody on Clemson's team or on their defense, and that was the name that kept coming up with their scouts and interviews. Was, you know, they loved what they saw to Anthony, but they got this kid named Lawson, you know. So there's talent there, and the word's out. Unless the shoulder injury comes up to be more than what it's looking like it could be, I expect him to go very high. I don't see him being available for 12, example, for the Saints.
So, Justin, you know, our teams are similar in certain ways in that, you know, it really is the defense that stirs the drink. I know that, you know, the Chiefs have some spots they're looking at to add some more ammunition on their defense. Where are the spots do you think that the Seahawks are going to be looking at defense in terms of just position groupings?
Defensive line, absolutely. I mean, this is a deep draft for the defensive line. So if you're picking late in the first round, you have a potential to get some good talent there. And that's kind of what's been missing these last 2 years over the Super Bowl run. You know, the Hawks can field 11 defensive players as good as anybody else in the league. But that's not really how you play, especially when you face really good teams. You really need that deep defensive line rotation. And, you know, bringing the new young guys on, getting them in that rotation gives them exposure, gets them playing time, gets them ready to take over as full-time starters. When you're kind of established great players like Bennett and Averill, in a couple of years, you know, looking down the line, if they're not back, you have that next man up ready to go. You know, it's the Seahawks top pick last year was Frank Clark, who not a lot of people got to see a whole lot of because he was using that rotation, but he was tremendous, and I expect them to continue that this year.
I'll tell you with Frank Clark, I'm a huge Michigan fan, and if he can stay out of trouble, he's going to be disgusting in that defense. He has the talent to be the best defensive end in football if he keeps his nose clean.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, I don't watch nearly as much college football as I do the NFL, but just watching him in the preseason, in OTAs and all that, last year he at times looked like he was the best player on the field. I mean, he looked absolutely insane. Another year under his belt. I know he's dropped a little bit of weight, trying to get a little bit faster, fill that Bruce Irvin role. That's just kind of the process. So, you know, I've seen some mocks projecting some defensive linemen at the end of the first round, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. That being said, this being the Seahawks, they're probably going to trade that pick away for a bucket of football and somebody that I've never heard of, and that person will turn out to be incredible. So I'm prepared for that.
Well, you said you're looking for defensive line help, and I think, you know, that transitions us nicely into the next section here, which is are the D tackles that Chris has ranked here. And you started off with the Alabama guys with A'shaun Robinson at the top spot, followed by Jerron Reed, then Sheldon Rankins, Andrew Billings, and at 5, Kenny Clark. Now, I haven't watched a ton of college tape, but I don't know. I've become more and more wary of Alabama prospects just because their defenses are just so talented from top to bottom for their competition level, where you have multiples of these guys. I mean, half the defense is getting drafted at any given year. And it becomes, I think, more difficult to figure out who is the guy that is like, it's his performance that is really, you know, making all of this happen. And when it comes to the D tackles, I especially have that question because, you know, would either of these guys, would Reed or Robinson be as good if they weren't next to each other? And you know, and what do you think of Alabama guys in general? I mean, and the fact that it seems like it's been a while since an Alabama defensive player has really panned out well in the league.
Yeah, Hightower's doing pretty well in New England. The reason I love, and in particular Alabama's defensive line, is they all basically have one job, and they all do it really well. Ashawn Robinson this year, he's a little bit of an exception to that because he does everything. He doesn't really have any holes in his game. Now, the hard part with evaluating him is when you're watching film, you want to see that thing that'll make him great. I don't think you get that with either one of them. You know, if you want that wow factor, Andrew Billings has plays that makes it look like nobody can block him. Where Robinson and Reed, I'm confident no matter what kind of defense you run, who you are, you take that person, you line him up, and he will always get the job done. He may not give you a ton of sacks, but he's not going to give a lot of rushing yards. The lineman won't be able to push him down the field. Especially now, something like Jerron Reed, I think his value is higher with him getting rid of the chop block, because they're going to have to man up and try to basically, they're going to have to double team him almost every play where he will get penetration. They're coached so well. They're so NFL ready. You don't really hear about, you know, those raw talent guys like the Deion Jordans who could be great, but turn out to be junk.
But that could go both ways in that. I mean, I do think, and you hear scouts talk about this as well, where they feel like at sometimes on teams that are so well coached, and I think Alabama definitely, you know, fits this description, where, you know, maybe they've already peaked. I mean, what you're looking for in a player is like, okay, we're going to take this young prospect who has certain things, certain abilities that are off the charts, and we're going to make him better. But when it comes to Alabama, it's like, you know, well, maybe what you've seen on the college tape is as good as they are. And while they may be a one-man wrecking crew at the college level, that's just sort of average in the NFL. I mean, that's why, I mean, as you mentioned, like Andrew Billings has some ridiculous plays. And I think Sheldon Rankins honestly does too. I mean, he's a bigger, slower guy, but the sort of, he also made the sort of plays that I think are really difficult for a big man to accomplish, you know? And so I was more impressed honestly by those two guys. I mean, but you know, what do you think about the idea of guys peaking and my crazy ideas about Rankins and Billings being better than Robinson and Reed?
Well, yeah, I was just going to chime in that. I definitely agree with you a lot on the thing about peaking. I think that, you know, at the NFL level, you would rather have the guy who was winning because of, honestly, sheer athleticism and doesn't have that technique, so your D-line coach can coach him up, rather than the guy who sort of maxed out his athleticism with great technique in college. Of the players you mentioned, though, I'm really curious about Rankins as well. I mean, he's a big body that sits in the middle, but I read somewhere he has like 14 sacks over the last 2 years. I mean, that interior pressure is so valuable and so incredibly rare. That's a player that has me super intrigued. I don't think there's any way he's going to fall down to where my team can reach him, but he's a player that really excites me.
No, and he's, you know, this is one of the troubles of creating a list is I really like Rankins, but I have him underneath two guys. So and trust me, I've been taking it on Twitter on this for my offensive one. If I had a three, I like you. I like you a lot. Just maybe not as much as Reed and Robinson. And, you know, for me, it's about, you know, who are you going to be in 5 to 6 years? When that second contract comes up, do I still want you on my team? Rankins has a very high ceiling, but I think he has a lower floor than both kids from Alabama. Billings, frankly, I think has the highest ceiling out of anybody. But that floor, you know, the ongoing joke that I've seen in some Saints forums is, you know, some plays he looks like Cedric Ellis. Another plays he looks like Cedric Ellis, which is a tribute to Cedric Ellis at USC was dominant. He went to the pros and he was just fat. That's the only way to describe it. There's no good way of saying it. There's Rankins to me reminds me a lot of Fairley, going back to New Orleans. I think some plays he could be dominant. Other plays, and I don't know if it's just technique, if it's effort, if it's conditioning, what it is. but he doesn't seem to have that nonstop motor. Billings can have horrible technique sometimes, and he gets eaten alive because of it. A man with his quickness and his size really should never be able to be blocked by one man. Yeah, I think what was it last year? He took the Henry record. I mean, he's a physical freak when it comes to his strength. But yet, you've seen guards that were able to just kind of manhandle him, and not guards that we discussed even last week. So there's some concerns with him there. My fifth guy, and I'm curious in your guys' take, Clark from UCLA. He's when this process first started, he was considered a top 15 pick. Now he's somebody that I see a lot of projections sliding to the second round. Do you guys think it's because of the rankings in the world and their potential and why that is? Or do you think maybe just more things were on earth? Because what I saw, 2 months ago is the same things I'm seeing now. And he seems like a really, really good, solid nose tackle.
I don't think it's anything about Clark per se. I mean, obviously his performances have spoken for themselves. I think what we're seeing now is that there's a lot of, especially the smaller school guys, that are starting to get more and more noticed by more and more people. And it's my general feeling overall about this defensive class is that most of them have, other than a defensive tackle, in my opinion, but I think most of them have some really clear top guys. And then there's a fairly long plateau of other very good prospects. So at a certain point, like after you get through the top one or two guys, there, I feel like almost every position has like five or six where they're all very similar in talent level. But it's sort of like what you're looking for. And that's why, I mean, I've seen especially the defensive guys have flown all over the place on mocks because of that.
Here's a player who's not on your list that I'm kind of curious about. And you know, I can't pronounce his last name. It's Robert. Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, thank you for bringing him up. I forgot to ask about him. Yeah. So, yeah, it seems like Kim Dietrich is falling down a lot of lists.
And out of a lot of windows.
Right. So, I mean, you don't have him. Nice one. Such quick wit, it blew right past me. So you don't have him in your top five. So does that mean that you just don't think he's going to end up drafted high, or you really think he's below all of these guys?
I don't think he's in the NFL in 3 to 4 years. He is. If he had just decent character, we would be discussing him as the same way that we discussed Jalen Ramsey, or we'll discuss Jalen Ramsey coming up here. Talent wise, he could be, if not possibly is, the most talented player in the draft. But I have a very big issue with somebody who, one, smokes so much synthetic marijuana, he falls out of windows. And the reports are, tried to do it a second time. And then at the combine, tries to throw his teammate under the bus, who's very likely to be the first pick in the draft. That's character on top of character on top of character. And that's, I mean, I get the you want to try to help him and you want that talent, but Dez Bryant is very similar to me in personality wise, and I think Dallas got lucky. And there's too much Justin Blackmon with Kim Dietrich for me. When you think back with Dez Bryant, they literally hired babysitters for him. That's not something I want my team to have to worry about. I don't want to have to worry about him ripping off jewelry stores or falling out of other windows. I know I keep bringing it up, but I really hope it to sink in. The man fell out of a window and then tried to do it again. That's the level of intelligence he has. So I know some teams have already taken him off their draft board. I think other teams will. The scary part about that is somebody like Pete Carroll might take a chance on him, especially if he falls to the second, third round. And if he can keep his head on straight, it's a great defense just got a lot better.
Yeah, and that's actually why I bring him up, because I've heard some talk of him coming here, which I would absolutely love. We've had a lot of success on those kind of cases. Although, can we all agree that, as soon as we hear stories about him smoking so much marijuana, he falls out a window, we just assume he's going to be a Pittsburgh Steeler?
Yeah, I mean, that's better a Bengal.
That is true. Apparently, yeah, the Steelers are trying to assemble themselves quite a party over there, at least for short periods of time, before those guys eventually get cut. But anyway, so moving back in the front seven, looking at the inside linebackers, you know, I just went on a rant about how the Alabama players are all individually useless and it's all about the team. Well, Reggie Ragland, your top inside linebacker, I don't think there's any doubt that this guy is an immense talent in and of himself. You have him followed by number two, Kentrell Brothers, three, Scooby Wright, four, Tyler Matakevich, and five, Nick Kwiatkowski. Sure. To me, I mean, the linebackers, and we're going to get to the outside guys here in a bit, it seems like the linebackers – in general, there's a huge drop off from the top guys. But so, I mean, to you though, I mean, how big is the gap between Ragland and Brothers?
Huge. Ragland, I think, now I'm not as high on Ragland as I think most. I've seen some people projecting him to like as early as 11 to the Bears. That's insane to me. He's a late first round at best. But then Brothers, I don't know level with you. I made this list a while ago at middle linebacker, and I could see dropping him down to four or five. I wouldn't take a middle linebacker before round three at the earliest after Ragland being gone. It's a pretty big drop-off. Now, that doesn't mean, like, Medicaid, I'm a big fan of, but he has limitations athletically. We'll just call him Ski, Kwiatkowski. I really, really like him. But, you know, I heard maybe it was Mel Kiper had compared him to like a poor man Sean Lee. And I think that's very fair. Reminds me of Sean Lee. He's just not as fast. But, I mean, all guys that you take, you know, in the fourth, fifth round and feel good about it. And then Scooby Wright. Scooby Wright might be the only exception to that. You know, he was great until he got hurt. And I think a lot of the lasting memory we have of him is that last bowl game where he didn't play great. He came back from that injury pretty early. He's still kind of, I think, suffering from it. He's somebody who might come into camp and just, you know, much like James Laurinaitis did in St. Louis, come in the second round, third round. You know the name, but you're not really excited on him. And then he averages 120 tackles for the next 8 years.
But moving to the outside linebackers, you know, I feel like we've had several back-to-back years where edge rushers get hyped and hyped and hyped and way overhyped. But this is a year where we only have one I've seen consistently as a first-round guy in mocks. And maybe it's just because there's just so many good interior and line guys. But you have the guy who I've seen literally all over the first round, and that is Miles Jack, followed by Kamale Correa, and then three, Deion Jones, four, Sua Craven, and five, Darren Lee. What I think is interesting about this group is you have a lot of – there are just a lot of the outside linebackers in general that are just – I feel like it's a size issue with them and them just not matching up really well to what the NFL looks for, regardless of the fact that a lot of these guys were dudes who would take over games at the college level. I mean, what do you think of this crop of outside linebackers overall?
I think you have a lot of weak side linebackers, which isn't valued that much in the NFL anymore. There's an importance right now on speed. So I think you're seeing more players like Deion Jones and Sua Cravens come in at that 215 to 225 range. And Telvin Smith is somebody who came in last year at Jacksonville. And I think kind of made it okay to be that small if you're going to be fast and can tackle. You know, you mentioned Kansas City, and there's two players on this list here that I think could work out very well there. Correa, I'm a huge fan of Correa. I think he's vastly underrated, and he's the only edge rusher that I have up here, with the exception of Lawson, that I think could play in a 3-4 outside linebacker spot, maybe Ogba. But I still think Cooper Check's better in a 4-3. You know, somebody like Correa could come in and he could fill in for that that Houston spot. He can, I think he could rotate with Lee or with Ford, I'm sorry. But he's also athletic enough to where I think he could switch to middle linebacker if need be, much like Clay Matthews has done at Green Bay. So that's somebody that you could use on the outside now while you need him for Houston, and then groom him to eventually take over for Derek Johnson. Another name that I think would work out great for Kansas City would be Darren Lee. Now, I'm not the biggest Darren Lee fan. I think he needs to take a year on the bench. But he's freakishly athletic. Now, I remember when Derek Johnson came out of University of Texas. He reminds me a lot of him. He's strong. He's fast. And when he wants to, he hits you and he hits you hard. So if he's willing to learn and play kind of that second fiddle for a year or two, I think you guys can move from Derek Johnson to the next Derek Johnson seamlessly.
Do you worry at all about Darren Lee's size?
No, I worry about his consistency. I think Darren Lee, he's high on many draft boards because of how athletic he is. But if you watch the film, he seems lost. Either lost or disinterested.
On the other side of the size issue, I really liked the tape of Sua Craven, but he's just so small. But yet he's just flying around. He's making plays everywhere. It's hard not to love the kid if you're watching his tape. But yeah, I mean, it's just difficult to figure out a position for him in a conventional defense, whether it's 3-4 or 4-3 in the NFL. I mean, I think what the Chiefs have done, I think, very well is they do all sorts of hybrid stuff where they frequently have, you know, three or four safeties on the field and, you know, only one or two cornerbacks. They'll do weird stuff like that. And, it, you know, it, and a lot of teams have these now tweener safeties and linebackers as well. He seems like the kind of guy that if you put him on a field, you could find a way to use him if you're creative. But what are your thoughts on him?
I love Cravens. I absolutely love Cravens. He's somebody who I think you make a mistake when you try to put him as a position, because then you'll start to downgrade him because of things like size. Now, he reminds me of players, not necessarily in stature, but there was a kind of a corner safety kid from Florida State a few years back, and LaMarcus Joyner, I believe it was. Small, but not that fast. But he was just a baller. The kid was always around the ball. You know, if there was an interception or a fumble recovery, he seemed to always be the guy doing it on that national championship team. Cravens reminds me of that. You put him on the field, you let him play, and he's going to make good things happen for you. Jalen Ramsey, we're going to talk about him next. He's the same thing. I have him at corner. He's probably a safety. Fact of the matter is, he just needs to be one of the 11 guys on the field.
Well, that you just made the segue. That was actually going to be my first question before we even got into the cornerbacks or the safeties, is where would you put him and does it matter?
I don't think it does. It's funny. When you go to the websites of our lads or, you know, everybody will say your team is either a 3-4 or a 4-3. Fact of the matter is a lot of teams run nickel 90% of the time. And that's just because it's become a passing league. So having that third corner on the field is incredibly important. Jalen Ramsey is somebody who I just want him on the field. I don't care. You can line him up at middle linebacker. He's got to make a play. So he's somebody that you bring him in and you put him on the tight end. If you're playing Seattle, that's the guy who guards Jimmy Graham. If you're playing New England, that's the guy who's shadowing Rob Gronkowski. And you just leave it at that. You figure out the other 10 guys in their position later. Ramsey, for me, is the top guy in the draft. If I was Tennessee, I would feel trade offers, but I'd be really happy if I could get Ramsey afterwards. Ramsey might be the only positive thing that happens to RG3 going to Cleveland, is that he's been there at two for them to take. He's that good. The kid's got potential for days.
But, I mean, still schematically, you have to plug him in somewhere and you have to give him set responsibilities. And this is what I was thinking about when I was watching his tape, because, I mean, yes, he can do everything, but at some point you have to tell him to do something. It's specific because you need other guys to then cover other responsibilities and do other things. And it seems like his skill set would make him ideal to be a box safety, but box safeties aren't really, you know, valued that highly. And you can find those guys other places. He may be the best by far, but I mean, it reminds me actually of some of the, you know, some of the growing pains that the Chiefs, I think, went through with Eric Berry, is figuring out the best way to utilize him, because he's also a guy who can do everything. But then, you know, in terms of creating a cohesive defense, you can't have him, you know, playing four different positions and moving things around. I mean, you sort of have to decide how you want to generally use him, because you want to keep those same personnel out there most of the time. And it becomes a bit too much of a headache if he's everything and nothing.
Well, he's somebody that you definitely have to have a plan for. You're absolutely right. But he's somebody, you know, like the Chiefs, for example. No, I've not been able to watch the Chiefs a lot last year, but I remember Eric Berry coming out of college, and he was somebody who could play deep middle, or he could man up. And that's what I think Ramsey has the ability of doing. And especially in a league that's kind of getting rid of the strong safety position, a lot of teams are kind of switching to two free safeties. You have the versatility with him to where you can line him up on, say, the slot receiver, or you could just have him run backwards the second that ball and have him run a deep zone and let him play center field. He's going to excel at both. There's not a lot of players that can do that. Frankly, and this is going to give me a lot of grief on Twitter, Ed Reed was kind of the last one we saw as versatile as Ramsey, where he's somebody, you know, Reed kind of just did whatever he wanted to for a while. They let him have the freedom to play the deep half, and if he wanted to play close, he could. If he wanted to come back, either way, they knew he was probably going to get at least a pick that game. So Ramsey's that guy that you let do that. You find their stud. You know, if you're playing against a team like Houston and you got Hopkins going deep, he's somebody who can play the middle. He can play deep, and he can give the corner the coverage. Or if you've got somebody who's got that big physical tight end, or that athletic tight end like a Jimmy Graham, you just let a man up on him all game. You run your scheme, you know, you run your scheme otherwise, but you just let him neutralize him the rest of the game, and you're good.
Well, I want to jump into the safeties then, because I have a lot more to say about the cornerbacks, because I have a feeling that's where the Chiefs are going to go in round one. But anyways, but first let's hit the safeties. I think, again, you have a non-controversial number one, which is Von Bell. But this is not, you know, this is also seems like these guys are going to end up being a smattering of mid-round picks. Von Bell is followed by Carl Joseph, Darian Thompson, Kevin Biard, and Jalen Mills. Safety is an interesting position in the draft, because it wasn't too long ago when we would never have any safeties taken high. The position has become far more important in the more pass-happy NFL. And yet, you know, it still seems like most of the guys end up becoming more of day two, day three guys that end up being big in the league rather than day one. What do you think about this year's, I mean, how they match up in general to years past?
It's a strong class if you could consider Ramsey a safety. I think Bell is really talented in coverage. But then it's kind of mediocre at best. You've got two really talented guys, and then you're right, a lot of third, fourth, fifth rounders.
The safety position has changed. It's sort of become the Swiss Army knife. You know, it became a position where you can stash a guy who does a bunch of things, where he's, you know, a coverage guy, but, you know, in a nickel situation, maybe he comes down and plays some linebacker if he's a little bit bigger. Look at what Arizona does with the Honey Badger. We talked about Eric Berry, and that's kind of what teams look for a lot of times nowadays. You know, rather than finding a dedicated speedy center fielder, free safety guy, and a dedicated thumper, teams are looking for those all-around guys, guys who can do everything. And depending on the situation, you know, you can be drafted as a safety and kind of flame out, but still contribute in other parts. Look at Taylor Mays, who flamed out as a safety and has tried to reinvent himself as a linebacker. That versatility right there is kind of unique out of most any position on the football field.
I was just going to say, you know, it's when you have that level of versatility, you know, in Kansas City, I've noticed that's a team who loves their safeties. That their safeties, they always have a ton of them on their active roster, and they're almost interchangeable. And that gives you the ability to disguise your defense.
Really, really good stuff. And I'm excited to now finally get to the position where I think the Chiefs are almost certainly going to pick a number one pick at this position. And I find your list really interesting. I mean, if we go ahead, we've already talked about Jalen Ramsey. He's your number one. But if we look at him as being sort of a position unto his own, he is a DB. And then we have the four names that remain. You have as your top corner, who is not named Jalen Ramsey, Eli Apple, followed by Vernon Hargreaves, then Mackenzie Alexander and Kendall Fuller. My first question for you is that if you had a number six here, would your number six, or therefore our five, if we're not counting Jalen Ramsey, would he be William Jackson III?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I was surprised I didn't see him because I'm very high on him, and I was interested that you didn't put him on the list. But then when I saw Jalen Ramsey there, I was like, oh, well, okay. But talk a bit about him.
The third? Jackson?
Yeah.
My biggest thing, he does everything well. There's not really a lot of holes in this game. He's got good build, speed. He can turn his hips. He seems to be able to play both man and zone. He's a little bit better in man. But my biggest issue, corner is such a hard position to come in the NFL and play. And though it's not impossible for a small school corner to come in, I feel like it just doesn't happen as often for you to see that immediate impact. So I think just level of competition is a big concern for me. And he'd be in my top five if I put Ramsey at safety, and I probably should put him at safety. I contemplated doing like just an athlete section like they do for high school recruits going to college and just putting Ramsey as an athlete, and the same thing with Cravens. But no, he's very talented.
Yeah, what I like about him, I had the exact same hesitation about him that you do, which is this level of competition playing down in Houston. But he may have played his best game in the Peach Bowl against Florida State. So that was the one thing that sort of like, okay, well, you know, maybe this guy can rise to the top. Either way, he's going to be most likely available for the Chiefs. After posting the best 40 time of all the corners, I'm a bit worried that someone's going to snag him mid first round, but him and the Chiefs seem like a very good fit, particularly given the fact that he's 6 foot and some change, I think, and he's a bigger guy, which would make him a pretty good scheme fit for us as well.
I like him. I don't necessarily like him for Kansas City.
No.
My fear with him is he's going to be very, very green coming in. Peters is a great corner. He was a great find for you guys. He gambles a lot. So my concern would be then having a corner on the other side of the field who's also known for gambling and is going to be that green. If I was Kansas City, I think Fuller actually to me is a little more pro ready, and he's got some injury concerns, but he might be a safer pick. Peters is your number one. I mean, you're essentially drafting a number two corner. Peters looks like he's got the ability to be shut down for years to come.
I like Fuller too, and I like all the guys on this list, and so this is why I've been excited to be able to break these guys down. Your number one, Eli Apple. I think a lot of people will be surprised to see him above Hargreaves. You clearly see something in him. I actually am I'm more down on him than I think most people are, because I feel like he certainly has the frame. He's kind of your really good big guy, but he hasn't shown that he has the speed, which even in college, receivers were getting some steps on him at times. And he didn't quite have the recovery speed. And I think that's going to be a problem that's exacerbated in the NFL. And, you know, obviously, I mean, he's got the long arms that he got himself his deflections, but didn't have great ball skills in terms of actually snagging the picks. What did you see in him that made you confident enough that you're like, all right, this is my number one non-Jalen Ramsey corner?
Well, I think he's you know, size for one. For two, I'm going to disagree. I think he might be the most athletic corner in this draft. The only issue is his short on his technique. He's very young. And I think he might actually, if I remember reading correctly, he's the youngest player in this draft. He's somebody who probably should have stayed in college for another year, but has big-time ability coming out. I liked him a lot to Roger Samardi when he came out of Middle Tennessee, where he's just a little bit smaller frame than you want, but fast, can turn his hips, and if he can be coached up, I think he can run in anybody's hip pocket. Again, I would be concerned if I was Kansas City with him, because I wouldn't want somebody that has to be groomed like he does. But this kid, his ceiling is I think his ceiling is like Nnamdi Asomugha good, where Kendall Fuller could just be a very good pro. I don't think he has star potential.
I kind of agree. I mean, but that's why I found it interesting. I mean, the Hargreaves seems like a star to me. I mean, he was just making plays all over the place during his college career. But you bumped him down a little bit. Is it just that you're just so high on an Apple ceiling?
That, and he gambles a lot, and not just with his pass protection, but in his tackling. You know, even semi-savvy college receivers were able to get him to bite on a double move or on a head fake. If you're expecting him to come in the NFL and, you know, God forbid, have to go against somebody like Antonio Brown, you're going to see a career day. Because he's going to have him spinning every play. I think almost any number one legitimate wide receiver is going to put him through some growing pains.
Well, and the other guy here who you have at number three of the non-Jalen Ramseys is Mackenzie Alexander. I like his tape a lot too. But, I mean, as everyone is going to point out, and, like, I don't know how you not make it not a red flag. I mean, he did not have an interception in college. Do you think that he can be coached to turn his head around and get both hands on the ball? He seems to have the ability to stay with man on man with receivers as good, as well, or better than anybody else in this class.
No, it's a huge red flag, and that's why I had dropped him. Though I don't think it's as much of a concern as we make it out to be. I know turnovers are key, but the Saints have somebody, and I've had somebody for years, named Keenan Lewis, who he couldn't catch my keys if I tossed them to him. But he spent years quietly shutting down number one receivers, and because he put on a bad defense, nobody talked about him. Dalvin Bro was another one that we unearthed last year. Kid had an amazing season. That football had to hit him right in the numbers for him to pick off the pass. Still love the fact that I have both of them. I'll get my turnover somewhere else. Well, as a Saints fan, I won't get a turnover, but I would try to plan on getting my turnover somewhere else. Because if you're, you know, constantly having to switch, you know, Atlanta, if Julio Jones was on Dalvin Bro, they just quit looking his way. So they had to work to get him away from Bro. Having that kind of talent on your field is worth it. You know, somebody like Kansas City, Eric Berry is going to be there. Eric Berry is awesome when the ball's in the air. I would let him, you know, hope for the tip drills.
But it's also, I think it's interesting about in terms of the way that the talent of this draft lays out, that if you're a team that is, you're trying to get a guy at a certain position in round one, you might actually end up getting a better impact player in round two, just because it seems like at several positions here, it really plateaus all the way from like the middle or back end of the first round all the way to the end of the second round, in terms of that group of guys are all pretty close to the same level.
It's going to be interesting. There's going to be a run of defensive tackles, and that's going to dictate what happens everywhere else. You know, I was talking to a few other Saints fans the other day, and the big push for Saints fans, just whatever defensive tackle is there, just first three rounds, whatever defensive tackle is there, there's a very good distinct possibility the Saints don't get one to like round four or five. But what's great about this draft is you still walk away really happy with what you got. You know, and the case that we laid out was, you know, Shaq Lawson's shoulder, he slips to 12. And that's a great pick for New Orleans. Well, then you go on to round two, and frankly, and I'll probably be proven wrong here, but I want to go on the record saying, I think Treadwell falls out of the first round. I think Doctson, I think Coleman, I think they've done a lot. And with Treadwell not running, then running slow, that's bad. I could see him slipping because teams are going to look at him, and then they're going to look at that Rankins who fell for some reason, and they're going to take Rankins instead. So then you go into the second round, and you could have a Cravens, a possibility of a Treadwell. Well, I mean, you can't be upset at either one of those. You go into round three, there's, you know, a good guard, a Turner, an Alexander, somebody of that nature sitting there, Garrett from Stanford. So that's a great pick. That's a huge need. Well, hell, now it's round four, and we still don't have a defensive tackle on our roster. That's going to happen to teams. They're going to go through, and they're going to be really, really happy when they walk out of draft day, and they're still going to see a glaring hole. Because between picks 19 and 25 or 19 and 34, teams came in and just wiped out the defensive tackles. But left a lot of talent around. So it's going to be fun to watch. I tell you, the June 1st cuts that typically happen after the draft, that's going to be – you're going to see a lot of talent come out. That's going to be really interesting as well. That's going to be a fun podcast in a couple of months.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I think we're going to have to leave it there. So if you've enjoyed what you've been listening to so far, we're going to have more content coming at you. We have a show every Thursday, every Sunday. This usually come out Monday morning. And you can find us at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. Or on Facebook at just by typing Next Fan Up into the search bar, and on Twitter at NFU Podcast. That is really the complaint and praise section. But if you want to direct some more complaints or praise more directly towards me, you can always do that at Clayton Nicholas is where I can be found on Twitter. And so for all of the complaints about why are we listening to another list and, oh, I hate the Saints, those specific, I'm sure, politely worded tweets should be sent to where, Chris?
At that patron saint.
Nice. And Justin, we haven't heard from you in quite a while. If people feel like you got short shrifted here and want to hear your thoughts in a much longer 140 character length, where can they find that?
You can find me on Twitter at Koreis. That's my last name. That's spelled Koreis. Feel free to hit me up if you have any questions, or as the guys in the Slack group know, if you want me just to absolutely torch you and your team for entertainment purposes, we can also do that. I love a good verbal firefight.
All right. Well, this has been Next Fan Up, and there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
I had to click it like three times that time.
I think we learned today that the show is 4 hours long.
Exactly.